This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The Crown's Fate by Evelyn Skye, performed by Steve West. The Crown's game is an old one, older than the Tsardom itself. But it is not the only game. There are games of love, played by boys and girls, games of deception, played by gamblers and thieves, games of war, played by generals and kings. Then there are the games that combine all three, played only by those with nothing to lose. But if the player has nothing to lose, then nothing remains, except to win. Chapter 1 Vika Andreeva was a confluence of minuscule bubbles, streaming through the wintry dusk. For a few moments, she gave herself up to the thrill of the magic, to the escape of evanescing.
I am the sky. I am the wind. I am freedom unleashed.
As soon as Vika rematerialized on the Kazakh step, though, solid reality replaced the joy of being everything, yet nearly nothing. She was here to work, to carry out an official assignment as Imperial Enchanter. She sighed. Only half an hour earlier, she had appeared at the royal stables, where Grand Princess Yuliana Romanova had been grooming her horse, or rather, a stable boy was grooming her horse, brushing its chestnut mane, while Yuliana pointed out every tiny knot. The boy didn't see Vika appear in the corner of the farthest stall, but Yuliana's sharp eye missed nothing.
Leave me,
the Grand Princess said, shooing the stable boy away. He jumped and skittered off, well trained not to linger against Yuliana's wishes. When he was gone, she turned to Vika and said,
Baroness Andreeva, it would be preferable if you entered the room, or the stable, the proper way, by being admitted and announced by the guards, like everyone else.
Vika cast Yuliana a sideways glance.
My apologies, Your Imperial Highness. It's just that, you see, I'm not like everyone else.
She crossed her arms. Yuliana huffed.
I'm here because your messenger said you wished to see me.
Vika curtsied with more than a touch of sarcasm. Hay clung to the hem of her dress as she rose. She noticed, but left it there. Vika had grown up in a forest. It seemed strange, almost, not to have bits of mud and leaves clinging to her. Yuliana arched a brow at the hay.
I need you to do something.
No, how are you? Or,
thank you for coming.
Not that Vika was surprised.
What is it? Manners, s'il vous plaît,
Yuliana said. Vika dipped her head and allowed it to bob down heavily.
Of course, Your Imperial Highness. I am at your service.
Yuliana rolled her eyes.
My brother and I need you to go to the Kazakh step.
Pardon? Vika jerked her head upright.
Are you deaf now, too, along with being impertinent? I said, we need you to go to the Kazakh step. The last time Pasha was there, talk of another rebellion was underway. We need to find out if their plans have developed any further, but our traditional means of gathering intelligence via scouts is slow. However, you could evanesce to the steppe and come back all in the same day. We've never had information so fresh.
But Vika was hardly listening. She couldn't go. That was where Nikolai, Russia's only other enchanter, was from. And now he was gone because he'd lost the crown's game.
How could I possibly walk through the steppe, as if it were just another place?
Vika's heart stomped to the beat of a mazurka, painfully aware of the wrongness of each solitary move without Nikolai as her partner. She shook her head.
I don't want to go. You can't send me there.
Yuliana had marched up to Vika, kicking hay in every direction,
I can and I will. You're the Imperial Enchanter. Do your job.
Which was how Vika found herself on the step now. She gave herself another moment, not only to recover from evanescing, it always took a few seconds to get reoriented, but also to brace herself for facing this place that reminded her too much of what, whom, she'd lost only 2 weeks ago. She took a very deep breath.
This is part of my duty. All my life, I've wanted nothing more than to be Imperial Enchanter, and this is what it entails. I can do this.
But it was a victory tinged with bittersweet. She took another long inhale. Before she left St. Petersburg, Vika had transformed her appearance to blend in more easily with the Kazakhs, changing her hair from red to black, and her clothes from a puff-sleeved gown to a tunic-like koilek, a collared dress, and a heavy chapan overcoat made of sheepskin. A few paces from the dark corner where she hid, the tented marketplace bustled. There were tables piled high with nuts and bins of spices, stalls selling fur-lined boots, and others boasting silver jewelry, all intricately patterned and inlaid with red, orange, and blue stones. There was a table that specialized in all manner of dried fruit, and everywhere there were people, smiling and inspecting goods and bargaining. A girl walked by, carrying a tray of enormous rounds of bread. They must have just come out of an oven, for their yeasty warmth filled the air. The smell, which reminded her of Ludmila Fanina's bakery at home, comforted Vika and pulled her out of her brooding. Besides, brooding didn't suit Vika. It was more Nikolai's disposition than hers, and she was actually incapable of being melancholy for long before something inside her itched to move along. The one time she'd submerged herself in sorrow after father's passing, she'd come out of it more agitated than ever, and she'd nearly destroyed Nikolai's home in response, only to become mortified with regret halfway through. Vika would not make the mistake of wallowing again for too long. She clenched her fists and stashed away the swirl of emotions that surrounded her thoughts of Nikolai, as hard as putting away those feelings could be. The bakery girl set down the tray at a stall a few yards away and began unloading the loaves onto the display. A crowd of women immediately surrounded the table, drawn to the fresh bread like garrulous seagulls to a picnic, and started yammering for the girl's attention. Ludmila would love to try Kazakh bread.
Brilliant.
Vika's eyes brightened. It would give her something to focus on other than Nikolai. She conjured a few Kazakh coins in her palm. Then she evanesced the money into the bakery girl's till, and in exchange, evanesced a round of bread all the way back to Ovchinen Island, where both Vika and Ludmila Fanina lived. The loaf would arrive at Cinderella Bakery, Ludmila's shop, still warm and steamy. Vika sent a brief letter with the bread, even though she was quite sure Ludmila would know who'd sent it. And now back to the task at hand. Vika left the bakery stall and walked around the perimeter of the marketplace. The only flaw in Yuliana's plan was that unless the people were speaking Russian or French, Vika wouldn't understand what they were saying.
But why can't I?
Being the only remaining enchanter in Russia did mean Vika could ask more of the Empire's magic, since she no longer had to share it. And she'd always been able to understand animals, like her albino messenger rat, Poslanik, by casting an enchantment over them. It had simply never occurred to her to translate another human language, because she'd needed only Russian, rudimentary French, and the speech of wolverines and foxes on Ovchinen Island. As Vika walked, she began to conjure a dome, of sorts, to surround the entire marketplace. The enchantment began on the ground, like a shimmering veil of liquid crystal rising from the dirt. At least, that was how it appeared to her, for Vika could see the magic at work. The enchantment trickled upward toward the sky, flowing as if it were not subject to the rules of gravity. It climbed the outside of the marketplace, then arched over the tops of the tents, enclosing the shoppers and vendors and their goods inside. But not really. The dome wasn't solid, The people couldn't see it or feel it, and they could enter and exit as they pleased. Vika's magic would only capture the scene, and then she'd be able to take the enchantment back to St. Petersburg to replay it for Yuliana and Pasha, who could walk through the memory dome as if they themselves had been here. It also included an enchantment to allow Vika to understand Kazakh, or an attempt at an enchantment like that, anyhow. If she could listen in, she could better root out whether there were any new developments in the region's unrest. She smiled grimly at the marketplace before her.
"I hope this works," she thought,
for if it did, she could capture scenes in other places, like the borders where the Russian and Ottoman empires chafed at each other. Such information would be invaluable. She also hoped it failed, because spending the rest of her days alone, spying at the edges of the empire, would be no life at all. The dome enchantment glistened lazily under the winter sun, its liquid crystal walls ebbing and flowing as the magic soaked up every word and action taking place within its confines. Vika picked up bits and pieces of the conversations.
"Two pairs of boots. That's too expensive for a leg of lamb. But Arujan hates dried apricots."
But then there was a lurch at the top of the dome, and Vika gasped as ripples stuttered over the surface of her enchantment, and a hole broke open into a jagged crack. Her power stumbled, as though the flow from Bolshebnoi Duplo, Russia's magical source, had suddenly been blocked. The sparks that normally danced through her fingertips were snuffed out.
"What?"
Her chest tightened, as if the air were being wrung from her lungs. The ripples threatened to build into something more, to cascade down the sides of the dome, undoing it all. Vika opened her arms to the air, palms up, and labored to catch her breath, while attempting to control the enchantment. She pulled on the magic that already existed, attempting to draw it up and over to patch the crack at the top of the dome. It was like tugging on fabric that was already stretched too tight. There wasn't enough of the magic to go around. But then, as quickly as it had hitched, the power flowed smoothly through Vika again. She was almost certain it wasn't her doing. The magic had hardly budged when she'd pulled on it. But somehow, the ripples on the dome flattened into a serene surface, flowing over the crooked tear at the top to make it whole. She dropped her arms by her sides, sweat beading on her forehead. What could have possibly caused a hitch like that in the magic? Her power had never faltered so completely before. Fatigue suddenly trampled her, like being run down by a carriage pulled by half a dozen spooked horses. And Vika laughed at herself, for in her head she could hear what Ludmila would say, what she had been saying.
"Too much work and not enough cookies. You need to take care of yourself, my sunshine. Rest and eat more sweets."
Rest. Vika shook her head. There was no such thing as rest for an imperial enchanter, certainly not one at Yuliana's constant command.
"But that doesn't mean there can't be more cookies."
Vika's stomach growled. She evanesced a few more coins to the nearby bakery stall. A moment later, a chak-chak cookie appeared in her palm, a cluster of fried dough piled together with syrup and walnut bits. Vika took a crunchy, honeyed bite. She smiled, popped the rest of the cookie into her mouth, and sent money for a handful more. Being Imperial Enchanter wasn't all bad. Chapter 2. Once she finished capturing the scene on the step, and having heard nothing that would imply an immediate threat from the Kazakhs, Vika evanesced back to St. Petersburg, to the banks of the frozen Neva River. Behind her, an enormous statue of the legendary Tsar, Peter the Great, sat atop a bronze horse and watched over the capital he'd built, this glorious Venice of the North. The city's bridges were dark at this hour, their holiday garlands that sparkled in the daytime now swallowed by the night, with only an occasional street lamp casting ghostly halos upon the snow-covered cobblestones. And all the people of the city were fast asleep. All but Vika, of course. To anyone else, midnight was silent. But to Vika, who could feel the elements as if they were a part of her soul, the darkness was full of sound. Water beneath the thick ice of the river, sluggish and near frozen, but still stirring. Winter moths flitting through the chilly air. Bare branches bending in the wind. She wouldn't be able to sleep for a while, if at all. Not after spending the last few hours immersed in the steppe. Heavens, how she missed Nikolai. For a brief period of time during the Crown's game, there had finally been someone else who could do what she could, who understood what it was like to be one, or two, of a kind, who knew who she truly was. So instead of going home, Vika looked out at the frozen river in front of her, in the direction of the island she'd created during the game. The people of St. Petersburg had dubbed it Letney Isle, Summer Island, for Vika had enchanted it as an eternally warm paradise. But she shuddered as she remembered the end of the game. Nikolai had attempted to kill himself, but the knife Galina gave him was charmed to never miss, and by that she'd meant never miss the target that Galina intended. So when Nikolai plunged the dagger into himself, it had actually pierced through Vika. And to keep her from dying, he'd siphoned his own energy to her. Vika closed her eyes as the echo of both Nikolai's and father's deaths reverberated through her bones. Two incredibly important people had given their lives for her. She was unworthy of the sacrifice.
I would have stopped them if I'd known what they were doing.
But that was why neither had let her know. The wind nipped more bitterly around her. Father was gone for good, but Nikolai, well, she'd seen him, or a silhouette that looked like him, in the steppe dream. There was an entire series of enchanted park benches on Letney Isle. A person need only sit on one of the dream benches, and he or she would be whisked away into an illusion of Moscow, Lake Baikal, Kostroma, or any of the other dozen places Nikolai had conjured. Each bench was a different dream. Was Nikolai still there now, in the steppe dream? Vika had gone back every day since she'd seen him that single instance last week, but he had not reappeared. Yet the benches themselves still existed, which meant his magic hadn't been extinguished. Perhaps that meant Nikolai was still, somehow, alive too. Then again, Vika could feel the old magic inside the statue of Peter the Great behind her, and that had been created decades ago by an enchanter who died in the Napoleonic Wars. But hopefully the shadow boy Vika had seen was a scrap of life that Nikolai had managed to hold on to for himself. Not quite enough to be real, but enough to be more than a dream.
If you're still in the bench, I'll find a way to get you out and make you yourself again, Vika said.
As she uttered the promise, her chest constricted. But it wasn't the invisible string that tethered her to Nikolai as enchanters. This pull on her chest was a different sort. Vika pressed her gloved hand to her left collarbone, where the scar of the game's crossed wands had once burned. Before the end of the game, Nikolai had said he loved her. It was possible Vika loved Nikolai too. But she didn't have much chance to contemplate her feelings, for behind her, heavy footsteps approached the statue of Peter the Great. Vika's pulse sped up. Had someone seen her evanesce here? Ordinary people couldn't know about magic. A long time ago they had believed, and there had been witch hunts, hysteria. Not to mention that the more people believed in magic, the more power Bolshevnoi Duplo created, which in turn meant that enchanters were a greater threat to the Tsar, because they could possibly usurp him. It was why the Crown's game and its oath had been conceived, to ensure that any enchanter would work with the Tsar, not against him, and why common folk's belief in magic had to be suppressed. After all she had survived, Vika didn't want to meet her end on a flaming pyre. The footsteps drew closer. Vika darted away from the embankment and ducked behind the Thunderstone, the massive slab of granite at the base of Peter the Great's statue. A minute later, a young fisherman stumbled into view. He was singing. No, slurring.
Thank heavens,
Vika thought, as she relaxed against the thunderstone.
He probably didn't see me anyway, and even if he did, he won't remember in the morning.
But then the boy reached the statue and stopped.
Oh, mercy, she thought. Anyone but him.
Vika lightened her steps as she inched around the thunderstone to a spot where he wouldn't see her. Because he might have worn a fisherman's cap, but he was no ordinary drunk. He was Pavel Alexandrovich Romanov, Pasha, Cesarevich, and heir to Russia's throne. Chapter 3. It was too late to be evening, yet too early to be morning, when Pasha tripped his way into Peter's Square. There was nothing princely about him at the moment, for he hadn't shaved in the fortnight since the end of the game, and he wore a tattered coat and a threadbare fisherman's cap, which had come from the secret chest where he stored his disguises. There was also the matter of the entire bottle of vodka he'd gloriously, or perhaps ingloriously, drunk on his own, and as he came to rest against the base of the statue of Peter the Great, reality was a bit slippery for Pasha to hold on to.
"Bonsoir, your Imperial Majesty," Pasha said from the Thunderstone.
Towering above him, an enormous bronze Peter looked out across the dark river, while his horse trampled a serpent, symbolizing the enemies of the Tsar and St. Petersburg. Legend had it the statue was enchanted, that it would always protect the people and the city.
"Quiet out tonight," Pasha said. "Looks like it's just you and me, Tsar and future Tsar."
He'd hesitated because he'd almost called himself a Tsar too. But Pasha was technically still only the Cesarevich, the heir to the throne, until the official coronation in Moscow next month. This felt right, though.
Tsar and future Tsar.
Pasha laughed and lowered himself down to the snowy ground. He rested his head against the thunderstone.
"Do you ever wish you could go back in time and do things over?"
Pasha asked the statue. He tilted his head farther back until he was looking up at the underbelly of the horse, as well as in the general direction of the bronze Tsar. Snow fell into Pasha's eyes. The horse snorted. Pasha startled.
"Did your horse just..."
But after a few moments of definite silence, he must have imagined the horse making a noise.
Damn it, how much had he drunk again?
Pasha returned to leaning against the stone.
"No, I suppose you never felt that way. You're Peter the Great. You're great by definition. Whereas I will be, what, Pasha the Unshaven?"
He waved his arms dramatically in the air.
"Pasha the Unprepared. Pasha the Dreadful, who never apologized to his best friend before sending him to his death."
He exhaled loudly.
"I just wish I could have a second chance. I would... I don't know what I would do. But I know I wouldn't demand the end of the game. There must have been some other way." "Be careful what you wish for, Your Imperial Highness," a voice said.
Pasha jumped to his feet and whirled. He looked at Peter the Great, eyes wide.
"Did you say something? Or was it you again?"
He shifted his focus to the horse. A girl came from around the other side of the Thunderstone. Her red hair flamed beneath the dull brown of her fur hat.
"Are you talking to the statue?"
Pasha blinked at her. It took a few seconds for his addled head to process what had happened. Of course, the voice had belonged to a girl, and not just any girl, to Vika, his imperial enchanter.
"I'm not talking to the statue,"
Pasha lied. How long had Vika been there, on the other side of the Thunderstone? Might as well add Pasha the Insane to his list of illustrious monikers. Vika came closer, but stopped several yards away from him. Ever since the end of the game, she'd maintained her distance. Pasha winced at the memory that the girl he'd once almost kissed now despised him.
"I mean it when I say you ought to be careful what you wish for," Vika said.
"Why? What could happen?"
"Anything. Or nothing. I don't know. But I've told you before, magic comes tied with many strings. Wishes, I'd imagine, are a bit like magic. Don't say I didn't warn you."
But Pasha smiled at her admonition. She could have left him here, babbling to Peter the Great, and possibly making a grave magical mistake.
But she took the time to intervene. She actually talked to me, voluntarily.
That was progress. He thought back to the last time they'd spoken, a week after the end of the game. She'd been in the step dream, and Pasha had come to find her, to apologize. She'd dismissed him. And then another week had passed, and he hadn't seen or heard from her at all. Now here she was, in the middle of the night, watching over him like an imperial enchanter would, or perhaps even like a friend. Pasha looked at the expanse of snow between them. Maybe the distance could be shortened, both figuratively and literally. He took a step toward her and tripped in the snow. Damn alcohol. It was probably closer to Samagone, homemade moonshine, than real vodka.
"That's what I get for drinking in an unfamiliar tavern," he thought.
But he couldn't go back to the magpie and the fox. Too many memories of him and Nikolai there. When Pasha got up, he held on to the Thunderstone for balance.
"To what do I owe the pleasure of your company? I was out for a stroll, your Imperial Highness."
That was also a post-game development. Vika refused to call Pasha by name. He tried not to wince again, at least not too visibly.
"Out for a stroll at this hour?"
Vika furrowed her brow.
"Since when do you have the right to judge my comings and goings?"
"I was only curious."
Vika held up her hand. A cold wind, colder than the one that already bedeviled St. Petersburg, swirled around her.
"You've had too much to drink, your Imperial Highness. I hope you pull yourself together before the coronation. The people will only tolerate the Grand Princess running the Empire for so long."
Pasha's insides flared. Perhaps it was indignation, or perhaps it was the Samagone in his stomach. Either way, it was enough to fuel him to stand up straight, without the Thunderstone's help.
"But it's true what Vika said, isn't it?"
Pasha's sister, Yuliana, was keeping the country going, attending imperial council meetings and receiving ambassadors, while he, the Cesarevich, was sneaking out of the Winter Palace in shoddy disguises and drowning himself in self-pity.
"I can act like a ruler, too."
The thought sloshed through his head, splashing against the inside of his skull.
"Vika," he said. "What?"
Her fiery hair whipped in the wind, like a solitary flame in the middle of the snow of Peter's Square. She was his flame, though, wasn't she? She was his Imperial Enchanter. A sloppy grin plastered itself across Pasha's face.
"I order you to conjure me a midnight snack."
Vika scowled.
"I beg your pardon." "You were right. I've had too much to drink, and I need some food to soak up the alcohol. And a fire, too, because it's a bit chilly out here, don't you think?" "No, I don't."
She stomped through the snow, until she was only a few inches away from him. She was much shorter than he, and had to look up at him. But somehow, she managed to make Pasha feel like he was the one who had to look up at her. Vika had a way of commanding more space than she occupied.
"I know that losing your parents must have been traumatic. God knows I understand that firsthand."
She paused, but she gathered herself in a fraction of a second.
"Yet I'm still here, even after Sergei died. You, on the other hand. I don't know what happened to change you, to make you demand the end of the game like you did. What happened to the Cesarevich, who was so sweet with me, and who was inseparable from his best friend? And now this, ordering me around like a mere kitchen servant.
She glared at him, even more intensely, her eyes like emeralds on fire.
I may be your imperial enchanter, but I refuse to use magic for inconsequential rubbish like fixing you a snack. Try it again, and I'll quit. Let's see how you do on charm alone, without any magic by your side.
Pasha's mouth dropped open. But at the same time, Vika shrieked and grabbed her left wrist. She fell against him, and Pasha caught her as they both stumbled backward, braced by the thunderstone.
Vika, what is it?
All thoughts about himself vanished. She didn't cry out again, but her entire body shook so hard, the tremors traveled through Pasha's hands where he held her into his bones. Pasha pried her gloved fingers off the left sleeve of her coat. She sucked air through her teeth. He pushed the wool up and away from her wrist. A bracelet, no, a cuff, a filigree of metallic vines, was wrapped tightly around her and burned and glowed orange like embers against her skin. Atop the cuff, the Russian Empire's gold double-headed eagle watched her with fiery ruby eyes. Pasha gasped. He'd been here before, almost like this, but in a carriage, with Vika by his side, as the scar on her collarbone glowed menacingly bright. And now this bracelet.
Where did you get that? What is it doing to you? It appeared just now,
Vika said through her teeth.
And it's burning me. Can't you see?
Her eyes watered as she bore the pain, but she wrenched herself away from Pasha's grip and fell immediately to her knees in the snow. He moved toward her, arms outstretched.
Stay back!
She snapped. He did as he was told. Her tone left no room for debate. Vika muttered something under her breath. A moment later, a platter of black bread and smoked herring appeared in the air in front of Pasha's nose. The bread was steaming hot, as if it had just come out of the oven, and the smell was enough to make his samagone-soaked stomach growl. He leaned instinctively toward it. Then the platter unceremoniously dumped its contents onto the dirty snow at Pasha's feet. Some of the herring landed on the toe of his boot.
Sacre bleu!
He jerked away, and the herring slid onto the ground, the slimy trail remaining on his shoe. Vika exhaled, and the tension in her body melted away. The bracelet stopped glowing and turned an innocuous, ordinary gold.
An immediate reaction to her obedience,
Pasha realized. He'd ordered her to conjure him a midnight snack. She'd refused. The bracelet had appeared and punished her, but had relented as soon as she complied with his request. Well, technically complied. He hadn't said anything about the snack being clean. She looked at him from where she remained kneeling in the snow.
Are you happy now?
Pasha shook his head.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that would happen. You seem sorry quite a bit lately, but only after being horrible.
She climbed to her feet, still glaring. Since it was the truth, he didn't try to defend himself. He pointed at Vika's wrist instead.
Are you all right now? As all right as one can be, I suppose, being literally cuffed to your Imperial Highness's service.
She bit her lip, but ferociously, not at all in the coy manner that girls of the court ordinarily bit their lips in Pasha's presence.
It was foolish of me to think I could simply refuse you, or walk away from being Imperial Enchanter. If I had a choice, I would release you from your obligations.
Pasha took a step toward her. Vika scowled. He didn't move any closer.
But you don't have that power, your Imperial Highness. The bracelet ensures that I stay. I swore an oath of loyalty to your father at the beginning of the game, and promised to abide by all the rules and traditions that had previously been established.
Pasha's brain was still soaked through with Samagone, and drawing logical conclusions took great effort. He spoke, but the thoughts came slowly.
And since you won the game, you're bound by the ancient magic of the oath to serve the Tsardom.
Her shoulders sagged then, as if sadness suddenly weighed her down and crushed her anger beneath it.
Apparently, if I can't be trusted to act in the interest of the crown, then there are safeguards to ensure that I do so. The roles of Tsar and Imperial Enchanter have not survived for centuries by chance.
She transferred her gaze from Pasha to the bracelet on her wrist. Then she yanked her coat sleeve down over the cuff, so she couldn't see it. Pasha leaned back against the Thunderstone. Part of him was relieved Vika couldn't just leave him. He needed her. But part of him hated that she stayed only because she was compelled to, not because she wanted to.
Well, then, Your Imperial Highness, now that you have your midnight snack...
Vika paused, as if to allow Pasha a moment to look at the bread and herring scattered, and now frozen, in the snow.
I should probably be going. As you mentioned, it's quite late.
She curtsied. It was terribly formal, with an emphasis on the terrible part.
Wait!
Pasha moved forward, undeterred this time by her glare.
I mean it when I say I'm so... Don't bother!
Snowflakes began to spin around her, and within seconds, Vika had dissolved herself so that she, too, was a part of the flurry, and then the wind whipped and carried her off. Pasha was alone again with the statue. He fell back against the Thunderstone and ran his hands through his mess of blonde waves. His fisherman's cap fell to the ground, appropriately into the herring, but he didn't care enough to pick it up.
Now I truly wish I could have a second chance, he said.
Pasha immediately slapped his glove over his mouth, for he'd made another wish, even after Vika had warned him.
And yet, I'd do anything for it to come true,
he thought. The Samagone made him both wistful and reckless. But why not? There was no risk, not really. Nikolai was dead. Vika hated him. Pasha was not getting a second chance with either. He kicked the loaf of bread across the square, hung his aching head, and trudged through the snow, back home to the lonely halls of the Winter Palace. Chapter 4 Vika rematerialized in the birch woods of Ovchinen Island, her home in the middle of the Nivar Bay. Yuliana had wanted her to move into the Winter Palace, but Vika had refused. She would not be a dog at the Grand Princess's constant beck and call. Besides, although St. Petersburg was stunning in its cosmopolitan way, it could not compare to this. Logs and boulders covered by thick blankets of pristine snow. Dense, wild forests sparkling with icicles beneath the moon. Preobrazhensky Creek sleeping peacefully under a layer of crystal blue ice. And yet, despite the beauty surrounding her, all Vika could think of was the bracelet. It was no longer hot, but she could still remember its burn.
Get off me!
She dug her fingernails beneath the edges. The bracelet did not budge, but the eagle's ruby eyes flashed at her. Vika glared right back at it, and she remembered the challenge Father had set up for her before the game, with the lightning and the ring of trees. She'd had to fight fire with fire. Could it work now? She focused on the bracelet and thought about heating it, melting it. It heated, but not because of Vika. She yelped as the gold glowed orange and the cuff tightened around her, the filigree digging in so that she could feel each curling vine of its pattern searing into her skin.
All right! I give up!
She shouted. The bracelet wove another inch of gold around her wrist, as if to emphasize that Vika's fate was not her own. Only then did it cool. But the smell of singed flesh lingered, and Vika gagged. She smothered her nose and mouth with her right hand, the uncuffed one that did not stink of charred skin. In that regard, the bracelet was very much like the game's Scar of Wands, which could also cease burning at a moment's notice, yet still leave pain lingering long afterward. She thought of Nikolai, and for a moment she forgot about the wisp of smoke that still rose from her skin. If only he were here right now, he might have an idea for how to evade the bracelet. Or at the very least, Vika would be with someone who could commiserate. Nikolai had shared similar suffering. He would understand both what an honor it was to be Imperial Enchanter, and what a burden it was as well. The need to see him suddenly consumed her, a silky, warm yearning, like the all-encompassing feel of his magic.
"To Letni Isle,"
she commanded silently.
"Please, Nikolai,"
she thought as she began to evanesce.
"Please be there tonight."
Chapter 5 Nikolai sat astride a black mare, both he and the horse watching a golden eagle soaring above as it scanned the Kazakh steppe for prey.
"Everything is always the same," he thought.
"Endless sky, hunting, breeze rustling through the tall grass." He sighed. Of course, Nikolai could change small pieces of the scene if he wanted to. He could make his horse dappled grey when he fancied it, or paint the sky in sunset or storm, for none of it was entirely real. This place, this junction between fantasy and reality, was a magical dream he'd conjured back when he was alive. Not that he was dead now. He was something in between. The end of the game had made him like this, neither corporeal nor mere spirit. He was a literal shadow of himself, which also meant that his ability to enchant was a shadow of what it used to be. The wind around Nikolai gusted, heralding the arrival of someone else on the step. He paused to look over his shoulder.
"Who has come now?"
This scene was accessible to anyone.
"Whoever you are," Nikolai thought. "Welcome to the Nightmare Bench."
Nightmare, because he hadn't been able to escape the dream, no matter how ferociously he tried to wake up, and reality marched onward everywhere else without him. It was as if his state of in-betweenness had condemned him to existing in a place of in-betweenness too. Still, he watched the visitor as she materialized into the step dream, and when he recognized her, Nikolai's entire body went to pins and needles. Her red hair flamed in the sunlight, broken only by a single streak of ash black. Even though she was tiny, she stood proud and powerful, as if she were twice her size, and she wore a green gown, years out of fashion, the same one she'd worn at the very beginning of the game. It could still be improved by a yellow ribbon.
"Bonjour, Vika,"
he whispered to himself, as he shifted his horse and his shadow self into the shade of the mountain nearby. Vika squinted at the vast horizon before her, in his direction, as if she could hear him, even though he knew she could not. But then again, they'd always had an undeniable connection. They'd been the only two enchanters in Russia, destined to come together, destined to tear each other apart. He slouched a little at the last thought.
"Nikolai, are you here?"
Vika called into the never-ending sky. The golden eagle wavered at the sound of her voice, because Nikolai faltered at the sound of it too. She'd come in search of him, and he couldn't bear it. Not when he looked like a shadow. Not when he loved her, but couldn't have her. And most of all, not when he felt both glad that he'd sacrificed himself at the end of the game in order for her to live, and resentful that he'd ended up in this nebulous state of anti-death. Vika pushed through the tall grass, clearly not caring a whit whether burrs scratched and clung to her gown. But Nikolai wouldn't allow her to reach him. For every foot that Vika marched forward, he extended the dream's landscape another foot. It was the least, and the most, his magic could do. And yet, slowly, Vika began to make progress toward the base of the mountain where he sat on his horse. But then she stopped, She was close enough that he could smell the honeysuckle cinnamon scent of her magic. Close enough that he could feel the wildness and warmth of it. Yet still far enough that he could remain hidden. She frowned.
Why won't you show yourself to me?
The sad edge in her voice was a chipped blade, still sharp, but no longer whole.
I just...
Vika sighed.
It's been a long night, although I suppose it's daytime here. You are here, aren't you?
She looked around her, at the grass and the sky and the yurt village in the distance. Nikolai closed his eyes.
You can't stay here forever. You have to come back. Give me a reason, he thought.
Because at the end of the game, Nikolai had confessed that he loved her, but Vika hadn't said it back. Was she here because she wanted him, or was she here out of guilt that he'd funneled all his energy into her and was left but a dark grey echo of his former self?
Pasha is a mess, Vika said. Not that you should forgive him for what he did to us. I certainly haven't.
She scowled, took several deep breaths, and continued.
But even though I'm furious at him, I feel for him too. He's lost his sense of self, yet flickers of it still appear every now and then. You should have seen the elaborate memorial he held in your honor, and he even made public that the Tsar was your father. I'm sorry. I didn't know. But if you came back, you would be royalty, Nikolai.
His eyes flew open. He'd known before the game ended that his mother, Aijana, had been spreading word throughout St. Petersburg that he was the Tsar's illegitimate son. But he hadn't realized the news had reached Pasha, and that it had been made official.
I could be royalty.
Nikolai laughed quietly to himself, in part because it was what he'd always wanted. As an orphan from the steppe, he'd never quite fit into St. Petersburg society, no matter how hard he tried. And in part because it was cruelly ironic that his acceptance into the nobility's ranks came only when he couldn't enjoy it.
And perhaps, Vika was saying, Pasha's guilt would be alleviated with your return. Maybe he'll be able to find his old self again.
Nikolai sighed and looked away, even though she couldn't see him. Of course she hadn't actually come for him. It was about Pasha. Everyone was always so concerned with Pasha. Was that the only reason Vika wanted Nikolai to return?
It's not enough, Nikolai thought.
He had loved Pasha like a brother, before they knew they were actually brothers. In fact, he still loved him. But did Pasha love him? For with a single twist of fate, Pasha had cast aside their entire history and demanded the end of the game. It was because of him that Nikolai was here, that he was a shadow. Nikolai's heart ached.
Is it that you can't come back?
Vika asked. Nikolai turned toward her voice again, unable to stay away from her for long. He was like a black lily that craved the sun.
If you would let me, she said, I could try to help you. Say it, he thought. Say you want to help me because you want me back, not because Pasha needs me, because you need me.
But she didn't. Nikolai stayed in the black shadow of the mountain, his own darkness rendering him nearly invisible. He willed his horse to stay silent. Vika looked up at the eagle still circling in the sky. Then she sighed, shook her head, and woke herself from the dream. Nikolai watched as her body faded till it was nothing. Nothing here, anyway. She'd be solid outside of the dream bench, on the island in the Nevar, where reality existed.
For the record,
Nikolai said aloud, even though there was no one to hear him.
I don't regret for an instant giving my life so you could live.
Because the truth was, if Nikolai had died, Vika would have been all right. But if she had lost the game and he had survived, if the crossed wands that scarred their collarbones had incinerated her with his dagger in her heart, Nikolai could not have endured it. And yet, although he regretted nothing of giving his life for her, his horse now took several steps toward where Vika had stood, which meant it was actually Nikolai who did so, for it was his will that created and directed everything in this dream. It was as if an unseen force kept him and Vika tied to each other, and wherever she went, he wanted to follow. His sacrifice ought to have been reward enough, but it wasn't, and now he wanted not only for Vika to survive and win the game, but also for himself to be able to live a life with her afterward. Nikolai frowned.
I'm not as noble as I thought.
Or perhaps nobility was overvalued. Then again, if there was anyone who could make more of the cards that life had dealt him, it was Nikolai. He'd always been resourceful. He'd always found a way. His golden eagle swooped down and perched on his arm. It tilted its head, as if asking for Nikolai's thoughts.
I'm going to free myself from here, Nikolai said.
He would not remain trapped in this strange purgatory between wakefulness and dream forever.
I'll get out. I swear it.
Chapter 6 Later, or was it the next day? It was impossible to tell. Nikolai hovered in the shade of a yurt as a young couple strolled by. In reality, they were sitting on a dream bench. But here, they were touring the Kazakh steppe in summer, arm in arm as they gawked at the colorful zigzag patterns on the wide, round tents, and licked their lips at the zhalburek kebabs roasting over the fire. The tribe who populated the dream could not see them. It was, for visitors, like walking through a museum exhibit, a moving diorama. And so, because they had no expectation of being seen, the couple did not notice that Nikolai had noticed them. He had an idea about how to escape the bench. Nikolai's mother had resurrected herself from anti-death by leaching energy from maggots and worms below ground. Nikolai was not as badly off as Aijana had been, but his state was a variation of anti-death, nonetheless. Perhaps he needed more energy if he had any hope of returning to his former self.
At the very least, I want out of this damned step dream, to be in the same world as Vika.
He slunk up behind the visiting couple and reached in the man's direction. And yet Nikolai hesitated before he actually touched the man. It wasn't as if he would hurt him. Nikolai would take only small quantities of energy from each visitor, and they would simply feel like they needed a nap upon returning to reality, which was a bit ironic, given that they were asleep while visiting the dream. But even this harmless act of siphoning off the slightest energy reeked of dishonor. There was something filthy about it, like Nikolai was stealing. And even worse, it pricked at his pride that he couldn't fix himself on his own.
But it must be done.
Nikolai swallowed his distaste and rested his fingers on the nearest visitor's back. The man didn't even flinch, for Nikolai's touch weighed nothing. The man's energy, though, was more than nothing. It was a thin rivulet of richness straight into Nikolai's core. He let out a quivering breath as the infusion of energy radiated inside him. This, the man felt on the back of his neck, like a wisp of a breeze. He twitched away and looked over his shoulder, but there was no one and nothing there, only a yurt half hidden by shade. He and the woman left soon after that.
Good riddance, Nikolai thought.
Although truth be told, he knew it wasn't the couple, but that filthiness he felt that he wanted to be rid of. As if the man and woman disappearing would mean Nikolai's memory of how low he'd stooped would disappear too. Obviously it did not. Nikolai leaned a little more heavily against the side of the yurt.
Don't look so grim,
a woman said as she materialized in front of him. Or what had been a woman, 18 years ago, before she'd been buried in that damnable state between life and death. Now resurrected, she was more walking ghoul than human.
Aijana,
Nikolai said. She hadn't visited him before, but he purposely kept his surprise out of his tone. He didn't want her to think he was excited to see her when he was, in fact, quite the opposite. Click, click, click. She clacked her long fingernails together.
When will you start calling me Mother? Or Mama?
Nikolai cringed.
Never.
She grimaced, exposing yellow teeth and rotten gums. Her black hair was missing in places, and the rest hung stringy and limp around the sallow skin of her face, where she had skin. And she'd stunk of weak old fish and putrefied flesh before Nikolai had surrounded her in an invisible bubble, back when he was still whole and had complete use of his magic. Nevertheless, her stench remained contained.
Not everything about me has been consigned to shadow, he thought.
It was some consolation to know that the enchantments he'd cast in the past still existed. The only thing remotely human about Aijana was her eyes, which glowed golden and defiantly alive.
I thought you were capable of looking beyond the superficial, she said. I am, Nikolai said. It's not because of your appearance that I refuse you. It's because you killed my father.
She flashed him a ghastly grin.
I'm glad you have come around to believing the Tsar really was your father. A lot of good that information does me.
Nikolai turned and began to walk away from the village, back to the open grassland where his eagle waited. Aijana limped straight through the fire over which the villagers cooked their dinner. It was only imaginary fire, after all, and followed Nikolai.
You would be back on the reality side of the dream benches by now if you would just kill the visitors who come here. You would have a great deal more energy that way, taking the Tsar's life, as well as those of his guards and a few others along the way, is how I am so strong.
Nikolai glared over his shoulder at her, but kept walking. In fact, he picked up the pace. For a barely living woman with one crippled leg, Aijana was awfully fast. It was, as she'd said, the energy from the lives she'd stolen.
And perhaps it's also that, as a shadow, I'm awfully slow.
Nikolai frowned. Regardless of the reason, Aijana did not fall too far behind him. Finally, Nikolai stopped pushing his way through the waist-high grass and whirled around.
What exactly is it you want from me?
Aijana stopped as well.
From you? Nothing. But for you? Everything. That girl should not have been the one to win the crown's game, and the so-called Cesarevich should not be the one to ascend to the throne. You have as much claim to the crown as he does. More, actually. At the time he would have been conceived, his mother had a lover. Alexis Okotnikov, I believe. So your precious friend is really the bastard product of the Tsarina and a mere staff captain.
Nikolai crossed his arms.
Don't say that about Pasha. You still defend him? After he all but shoved you to your death?
Nikolai rubbed his eyes with the heels of his hands. It was true what Aijana said. Pasha had forced the end of the game, knowing that meant either Nikolai or Vika would die. And of course Nikolai was angry and heartbroken over it. But Pasha had also just lost both his parents. And Nikolai understood Yuliana well enough that it was clear her hand had more than guided Pasha's decision to declare the violent finale of the game. It was difficult for Nikolai to know which was worse, that he still loved Pasha, or that he still felt betrayed.
The rumor about the Tsarina and her lover is unsubstantiated, Nikolai.